Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we'll have a tale of two wildfires and what a difference nighttime aerial drops made in the recent Highland fire in Agwanga. Then on our Capitol Report, learn how local congressional representatives voted on recent measures in Congress involving the Israel-Hamas war and what they've been saying about support for Israel as well as humanitarian aid for Gaza. El Cajon's former longtime mayor Mark Lewis has died, and today we'll have a look back at his remarkable life and legacy. A search is on for a missing Ramona senior woman at risk, and we'll have the tales. From California News Service, we'll have a report on rising textbook costs and what some colleges and universities are doing to try and bring those expenses down. You're invited to the KNSJ 10-year anniversary gala, so stay tuned for the festive details later on today. The Justice Department has reached a settlement in a lawsuit over Trump-era separations of families at the U.S.-Mexico border to help families torn apart and, hopefully, prevent future separations. The historic De Anza Clubhouse in Borrego Springs has been destroyed by fire. Plus, we'll have a report from California News Service on rising food insecurity across the United States. The FDA is warning consumers about dangerous eye drops sold through major retailers that can cause infection or blindness. Conservatives are working to qualify a California ballot measure to require voter IDs, and we'll have details. The county medical examiner is asking for public help to identify a woman who was killed in an accident in El Cajon back in September. On Destination East County, we'll have a rundown on holiday festivities coming up, from lighting displays to a Polar Express train ride, holiday marketplaces, festivals, ice skating, and a performance of Nutcracker Ballet, all in San Diego's Inland Region. And finally, from Public News Service, we'll have some top national news stories, including reactions by national political figures to how the Israel-Hamas conflict is going, and more. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
2 decades ago, the deadly Cedar Fire started in late October, shortly after 5:30 p.m. A decision was made not to put pilots at risk with night drops. That fire grew to 273,000 acres and destroyed 2,200 homes. By contrast, when a fast-moving fire started on October 31st, this past week, in Agwanga in Riverside County, just over the San Diego County line, we learned what a difference nighttime aerial firefighting can make. On the first night, the fire swelled to 2,200 acres. But on the second night, with Santa Ana winds fueling the fast-moving Highland Fire, it had 0% containment. So CAL FIRE's incident commander in Riverside made the decision to fight the fast-moving blaze by air throughout the night, preventing what could have become another regional inferno. A CAL FIRE helicopter crew dropped 4,200 gallons of water, with thousands of people evacuated from their homes and many structures threatened. By dawn, due to the helicopter crew's valiant efforts along with improved weather conditions, the fire had been held to 2,457 acres, growing only 257 acres overnight. Over the next 2 days, ground crews and more aerial drops battled the blaze, which grew only another 30 acres. The fire burned 7 structures and damaged 6 more, with 1 injury reported. But it could have been far worse, since thousands of homes were threatened the night that a helicopter crew battled the blaze, despite darkness and perilous conditions. Over 1,200 firefighters battled the blaze, with crews from multiple jurisdictions, including federal, state, local, and tribal governments. The fire shut down Highway 79 at the county line, also closing down several surface streets. Carla an Iwanga resident who asked that her last name not be aired, shared her concerns over the fate of the Jojoba RV resort and said many area residents were unable to get home. The next day, in a second email to East County Magazine, she praised the firefighters' efforts, stating, "The Jojoba RV resort was saved thanks to over 100 firefighters putting themselves between the fire and the resort and stopping it," adding, "They dropped lots of retardant along the north side of 79, which likely kept it from jumping to our side." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. After the House of Representatives finally elected a new speaker, Mike Johnson, the first action was a bipartisan resolution to support Israel's war against Hamas and to condemn Iran for aiding Hamas and other terror groups. The resolution passed 412-10, with all five of San Diego's congressional representatives voting in favor. But our local members differ sharply on other aspects of the Israel-Hamas conflict, including whether aid to Israel should be linked to humanitarian aid for Gaza and support for Ukraine. Congressman Scott Peters, a Democrat, said of the resolution, "The House made clear that it stands with our ally Israel following Hamas's barbaric attack on October 7th that killed over 1,000 Israelis and dozens of Americans. We condemn the kidnapping of hundreds and call for the immediate release of all hostages." But in a separate post on X, formerly known as Twitter, on October 25th, Peters noted, "Hamas does not represent the Palestinian people. Civilians, regardless of their ethnicity, religion, or nationality, should not have to suffer for Hamas's atrocities. We must continue to work on getting food, water, and shelter to innocent civilians in Gaza." The United Nations estimates that as many as 9,000 people in Gaza have died during the Israeli military response to the October 7th massacre of Israeli civilians by Hamas, which killed about 1,300 Israelis. Peters says he supports robust funding to Israel to defend itself, but he voted against a Republican-backed bill that would have funded aid to Israel by slashing IRS funding, a move Peters said would increase the deficit by $26 billion, hampering the IRS's ability to recover money from wealthy tax cheats and go after money laundering by terrorist organizations. He also criticized that bill for not providing any humanitarian aid to Gaza civilians who are suffering. The Senate plans to put forward its own bill, of which Peters says, "I look forward to a comprehensive national security package from the Senate that funds Israel, Ukraine, and humanitarian aid." But Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, backed the bill to fund Israeli aid only, without humanitarian aid to Gaza or military help for Ukraine. On social media, Issa posted, "Our aid to Israel will help take the fight to Hamas and is paid for by funding we're cutting from the Biden IRS." Issa retweeted a photo of pro-Palestinian demonstrators whom he likened to a mob. The protesters were carrying signs calling to end the war on Gaza and free Palestine. Issa commented, "Stand up to the mob. Stand with Israel." Issa has also called for stronger sanctions on Iran and permanent freezing of Iran's oil assets, since Iran has reportedly trained and aided Hamas terrorists. In recent weeks, pro-Palestinian groups have held marches and rallies locally and nationally seeking a ceasefire. San Diego streets were shut down by a pro-Palestinian march last month, NBC reports. Some have called for a ceasefire, but more radical elements have called for an end to the nation of Israel, a position that backers of Israel say makes negotiations futile and eradication of Hamas essential for Israel's survival. But recent Israeli bombings have included a refugee camp where Israel said a high-level Hamas leader was located. This strike, along with strikes on civilian targets, have sparked anger across the Arab world, and some Jewish people are also voicing concerns for Gazans. Jewish Voice for Peace held a rally at the San Diego office of Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, who is Jewish, and delivered a letter asking her to support a resolution calling for a ceasefire. Avital Aboudi, an Israeli-American, said, "We're all grieving," adding that she does not support Hamas attack on Israel, nor Israel's airstrikes on Gaza, 10 News reports. The Biden administration has opposed a ceasefire, but has called for a pause by Israeli's military to allow for getting more foreign nationals out of Gaza and more aid to enter Gaza. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has said a ceasefire would simply leave Hamas in place, able to regroup and repeat what it did on October 7th. So far, none of the San Diego delegation has voiced support for a full ceasefire. Sarah Jacobs, who is a Democrat, has stood with Israel, but also condemned the refugee camp attack by Israel, calling it horrific. She said on social media, "States have an obligation to protect civilians. Even if the strikes were aimed at legitimate military targets, repeatedly bombing Jabalia refugee camp is completely unacceptable." Jacobs co-authored a resolution calling on leaders of both houses of Congress to swiftly pass President Joe Biden's request for emergency supplemental funding to include disaster assistance for humanitarian needs in Gaza. The letter states, "We believe that a prompt and robust humanitarian response is necessary to protect the lives of Palestinians, Americans, and Israelis, whose security will be weakened if we fail to meet the humanitarian needs in the region." And the letter noted that over 1 million people have fled violence in Gaza, yet the region lacks adequate food, water, fuel, and medical care. Congressman Juan Vargas, also a Democrat, voiced strong support for Israel immediately after the violent Hamas attack on Israeli civilians. On October 9th, he wrote, "The United States must condemn these acts of terrorism against one of our strongest allies. I'm proud to support Israel, her democracy, and her right to self-defense." He denounced Iranian-backed Houthi and Palestinian Islamic Jihad militants for firing missiles at Israel. Vargas wrote, "Iran has grown its network of proxies and funds its foreign terrorism regime against our allies and partners. We must provide a bipartisan front to hold Iranian-backed terrorists accountable." He also called on all nations to demand that Hamas release all abducted prisoners immediately. Most poignant are the comments of Congressman Mike Levin, who is Jewish. On October 10th, he posted, "I visited Kibbutz Kfar Aza in February with a group of my House colleagues. We met with brave families committed to peace. The atrocities committed there and elsewhere by Hamas terrorists are unimaginable and heartbreaking. We must stand unequivocally with the people of Israel." But Levin, a Democrat, voted against the Israeli aid bill and blasted Speaker Johnson for tying aid to gutting IRS funding. He also slammed the chair of the Republican National Committee for calling the Hamas attack a great opportunity for our candidates. In a press statement, Levin said, "I support aiding Israel as it seeks to rescue its civilians kidnapped by Hamas and to end the threat of future attacks that terrorism poses to the Israeli people." But regarding the bill put forward by House Republicans, Levin said, "It sets an awful precedent to condition critical aid in a time of war to advance an unrelated political agenda, protecting wealthy tax cheats while increasing the deficit." He also voted against the measure because its passage would make it harder, in his view, to later seek aid for other allies, including Ukraine and Taiwan, which were excluded from the GOP bill. Levin urged the Senate to take up President Biden's supplemental funding request, including humanitarian aid for Gazans, as well as aid for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, and send it back to the House to show, quote, "bipartisan unity in the face of threats to democracy and peace worldwide." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Mark Lewis, who served El Cajon as mayor and city councilman for 25 years, overseeing major changes in the community, has died of complications from a stroke suffered last year. His family members were with him at a hospice center where he passed away on October 12th at age 75. His widow, Chris Lewis, told East County Magazine he loved El Cajon and everyone in it. Mayor Lewis led the city through a recession and a centennial, heading up efforts to revitalize downtown, bring fun to city residents, and create a cleaner, greener community for future generations. He also served as the county's waste management coordinator, chaired Sandag's Public Safety Board, was foreman of county grand jury, and served on the Indian Gaming Commission. A complex, larger-than-life figure, Lewis also wrote poetry and authored a book of haiku dedicated to mankind in the hope that those who read it will act in some way to improve the existence of man. Known for his sense of humor, in his younger days he enjoyed stints as a stand-up comedian, but he was most proud of leading efforts to revitalize downtown El Cajon and implement green programs that cleaned up the city's air pollution. He was born in Arkansas in 1948. His father served in the Air Force, so the family moved several times before settling in San Diego's South Bay. After seeing the Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon, young Mark reportedly asked his family to move to El Cajon. They did, living in a trailer park. Lewis never outgrew his love of the parade. Years later, when parade organizers suffered financial problems, Lewis brought in a Johnny Depp celebrity impersonator to raise money to save the parade. He later rode on a float in the parade that had delighted him as a child. He graduated from Granite Hills High School, attended Grossmont College, and got a bachelor's degree in speech from San Diego State University. After graduating, he met his wife while both were trainees at the May Company department stores. According to his wife, on their first date atop Grossmont Summit, he told her, "I'm going to be mayor of this city someday." For years, the couple lived in an apartment and raised four children without much money, she recalls. But he never forgot that dream. While working at the county in 1979, he started White Paper Office Recycling Program and helped fund an ecology center, earning a county proclamation. He began volunteering at events to get involved in the city and won election in the El Cajon City Council, serving 12 years before winning election as mayor in 1998. He ran on a platform that included bringing fun back to El Cajon, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported. Lewis spent the next 14 years as El Cajon's mayor, attaining many milestones, including leading the city through its 75th anniversary and its centennial in 2012, his last year in office. When Lewis first came to El Cajon, Old Highway 80 took travelers through the city's downtown. But after Interstate 8 and the Parkway Plaza Regional Mall pulled traffic and shoppers out of the city's core, the downtown area declined. Lewis dreamed of making El Cajon like San Diego's Gaslamp District. He determined to focus on downtown revitalization, which included a major facelift that included outdoor seating and upgrading building facades along the historic district, as well as remodeling Prescott Promenade to attract larger events to downtown El Cajon. New businesses, restaurants, and a brewery came to town, drawn in part by crowds flocking to new events such as Cajon Classic Cruise, Concerts on the Green, Alley Cat Art Walk, and a Parade of Lights. In his final term, Lewis said he looked forward to the city's newly planned America on Main Street Festival, celebrating cultural diversity and featuring a citizenship swearing-in ceremony. As part-time mayor, while also serving as the county's waste management coordinator, he proudly proclaimed the nickname Captain Trash and drove a car with license plates that bore that name. He implemented a program that recycled 2,000 tons a day, and El Cajon became the county's only zero-waste city. El Cajon converted its fleet of 125 trash trucks to run on natural gas from landfills. Lewis credits that with reducing the city's smoggy air. "You can see the difference," he said in an interview with East County Magazine in 2010. He also led efforts to make El Cajon a Tree City USA, raising $500,000 to start the program. He bought a giant sequoia seedling that he named Woody, which he carried to many public meetings, touting the importance of planting trees across the city. Lewis was proud of the city's no-kill animal shelter and brought homeless animals into council hearings, including a pot-bellied pig that needed a new home. He also paid out of his own pocket to erect a duck crossing sign after a duck was struck by a vehicle and killed near the city's duck pond. He conducted council meetings in a manner that was respectful to all, whether the speaker was a civic leader or a homeless man. He was one of the rare few who lived up to the mantra of a compassionate conservative after switching parties from Democrat to Republican. Councilman Gary Kendrick served alongside Lewis for many years. He says Mark Lewis really cared about people, adding, he would drive around the city often in the middle of the night just to see how things were. And he ate at every single new restaurant in the city. People would come up to him, and he would talk to them as long as they wanted. Kendrick once confided in Lewis, while at an East County Performing Arts Center show, that his own son, Jesse Kendrick, was having trouble adjusting to a new baby in the family. The mayor invited young Jesse, 4, on a tour of City Hall, including a secret passage to the mayor's office, up a fire ladder, then gave the youngster the keys to the city and a coonskin cap that Lewis had since he was a child, Kendrick said. Lewis's tenure was not without controversy. The East County Performing Arts Center closed down on his watch, with the mayor resolved not to reopen it until repairs and remodeling could be afforded to do it right. He supported a fundraising event to save the theater, with entertainment from ballet folklorico dancers to Hollywood celebrity impersonators. It took a decade, but shortly after Lewis left office, the city did attract Live Nation to provide professional management. The theater reopened as the Magnolia and is now a financial success. Lewis staunchly defended his support of a half-cent sales tax increase, which voters approved to prevent layoffs of police and firefighters. He also oversaw consolidation of the city's fire department with neighboring El Cajon and Lemon Grove under Heartland Fire and Rescue, a move that saved taxpayers $500,000. Lewis also oversaw construction of the new Public Safety Center, or police station, funded by a ballot proposition, as well as renovation of Wells Park and recreational facilities through grant funding. Also on his watch, affordable housing and senior housing were constructed. The city made it easier to convert apartments to condominiums for new home buyers, and the El Cajon Neighbors website was set up to engage the community on ways to reduce crime. The city also funded programs to help the homeless through the East County Transitional Living Center. Lewis helped the city secure funds and equipment from local tribes to offset impacts of Native American casinos. Those benefits to El Cajon included repaving streets, adding police cars and streetlights, and securing instruments to identify tattoos on crime suspects, as well as stolen vehicles. During the city's centennial in 2012, Mayor Lewis reflected on how the city had changed since its founding a century earlier, when they ran pigs down Main Street and advertised flume rides all the way from Cuyamaca to El Cajon. He cut a ribbon to open Centennial Plaza near City Hall. The next year, in October 2013, Mayor Lewis announced his resignation due to health reasons, citing cancer, a dislocated shoulder, and a minor stroke. He said he was stepping down to, quote, allow our city and community to move forward in their work to make this city the finest place it can be. Adding in his resignation letter, I deeply love our town and have given a major portion of my adult life to its well-being. So this is a bittersweet moment for me. He apologized for remarks that drew criticism 2 days before his resignation, comments he made in an interview with The Progressive, which were characterized by critics as insensitive towards Chaldean immigrants. Asked by the interviewer if some citizens resented refugees from Iraq, Lewis mentioned schoolchildren receiving free lunches while being picked up by parents driving luxury vehicles. But the remarks were taken out of context. A tape of the full interview obtained by East County Magazine revealed Mayor Lewis also praising Chaldeans as wonderful people who are hardworking and good residents deserving of the land of opportunities in America. In an earlier interview with East County Magazine, Lewis also praised Chaldean immigrants and spoke to the city's efforts to work with Chaldean churches to help the city's 40,000 Iraqi Americans learn English skills, get good jobs, and assimilate into local culture. He spoke with pride of going to many events for Iraqi immigrants and other cultural groups in the community. Lewis was a giant among East County leaders, serving his city for 35 years and leaving behind a legacy of many enhancements to the community and the people of El Cajon. But he was also humble, once writing a poem titled Giants, in which he noted that all things on earth are made by God, concluding, "Truly the only thing we have really made is our own mistakes from day to day." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The San Diego Sheriff's Search and Rescue Unit has been activated to help locate a missing person in Ramona. Shortly after 2:30 p.m. on November 2nd, the Sheriff's Communications Center received a call from the family of 66-year-old Zita Swanson. They told the sheriff's dispatcher that Swanson had walked away from her home in the 700 block of G Street in Ramona and did not return home. She does not have any known access to vehicles and is not believed to be carrying a cell phone or a purse. She has a history of walking away from home. Swanson is a Hispanic woman, about 5'5" tall and weighing around 174 pounds. She has gray hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a navy blue sweater and blue pants. So, folks, if you see Swanson or have any information on her whereabouts, please call 911. Or the San Diego County Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. Reporting for East County Magazine from Ramona, this is Miriam Raftery.
College students pay upwards of $1,100 a year for books and supplies, so many schools are working to try to reduce that burden. A study from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group finds the cost of course materials has increased at three times the rate of inflation since the 1970s, due mostly to a lack of competition in the college publishing industry. Kaylin Nagel with the Mickelson 20 Million Minds Foundation is a co-author of that report.
We see 65% of students skip buying a textbook due to cost. And 21% of students skip buying an access code because they can't afford it.
Many campus libraries lend out textbooks, and bookstores sell used books and facilitate rentals or digital downloads. Students look for deals online, and schools are also moving toward an open educational resource model, where courses use textbooks, journals, and other materials that are free online. In 2021, the state of California allocated $115 million to help schools promote the transition. Leslie Kennedy is with the California State University Office of the Chancellor.
We work really hard to help faculty become aware of zero-cost course materials and to help them with the time and effort that it takes to migrate their courses utilizing a free or low-cost material.
Recently, Governor Gavin Newsom signed Assembly Bill 607, which requires colleges and universities to disclose the costs of their courses, books, and materials ahead of time. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
You're invited. KNSJ 89.1 FM is celebrating 10 years of community-powered radio. Join us at our gala, Saturday, November 11th, at the UDW AFSME Hall, 4855 Seminole Drive in San Diego. Doors open at 5 p.m. for dinner and entertainment with Reg E. Gaines, Katie LaDubs, Young Lions, and Gilbert Castellanos. For tickets, go to knsj.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The U.S. Justice Department has reached a settlement in a San Diego-based class action lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of immigrant families separated at the international border by the Trump administration's zero-tolerance immigration policy. The settlement is subject to a judge's approval. Attorney General Merrick Garland says, "The practice of separating families at the southwest border was shameful. This agreement will facilitate the reunification of separated families and provide them with critical services to aid in their recovery." Anthony Romero, executive director of the ACLU, says, "The ACLU has settled hundreds of lawsuits in our 103-year history, but none more important than this one. To America's enduring shame, we tore children from the arms of their families to enact a xenophobic agenda." He adds, "This settlement closes the darkest chapter of the Trump administration. But as welcomed as it is, the damage inflicted on those families will forever be tragic and irreversible. Under the Trump-era policy, thousands of children, including babies and toddlers, were sent to facilities thousands of miles away from their parents," the ACLU documented. "Children and parents were not told if they would ever see each other again. The Trump administration failed to track the children, so that even after a court ordered the families to be reunited, federal officials could not identify the parents of the children. President Joe Biden issued an executive order to establish an interagency task force on the reunification of families. As a result, over 750 children have been returned to their families, and another 85 are in the process of being reunited. But many parents have not been found. Some are believed to have been deported or left the U.S. Shockingly, the task force also found that over 290 children who are U.S. citizens were illegally taken from their parents at the border. The settlement in the class action case, Ms. L. versus ICE, covers an estimated 4,500 to 5,000 children and parents who were separated between January 20th, 2017 and January 20th, 2021. Anyone who believes they are a class action member can submit a claim to the Family Reunification Task Force at the together.gov website. The settlement in the lawsuit requires that efforts to reunify children with parents in the U.S. must continue. In addition, separated families will be granted immigration relief and allowed to stay temporarily in the U.S. They will receive free legal help with immigration and asylum court matters, as well as medical coverage, counseling, and temporary housing, but not financial reparations. The settlement prohibits the federal government from reenacting the zero-tolerance policy, which ended under the Biden administration, for the next 8 years. Family separations will be prohibited except in very limited circumstances, such as medical emergencies, national security cases, or cases in which a parent has a serious criminal warrant or a child's safety is at risk. Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta calls the separation of families at our southern border a betrayal of our nation's values. She hopes that the settlement agreement will address impacts of the families who were separated and prevent future separations. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
An early morning fire on October 30th has destroyed the historic clubhouse at De Anza Country Club in Borrego Springs. The club posted on Facebook, "Sad news to report, our beautiful clubhouse at De Anza has burned." The Bighorn Room, Coyote Den, ballroom, offices, and locker rooms were all ruined. The golf shop, however, survived. "We are all devastated, members, employees, and friends of De Anza." County Supervisor Jim Desmond posted on social media that his heart goes out to the Borrego Springs community after the devastating fire. He voiced gratitude for the heroic efforts of CAL FIRE San Diego to ensure there were no injuries and said his office will be doing all it can to support and assist residents during this challenging time. Over 60 CAL FIRE firefighters fought the fire. When crews arrived early that morning, 75% of the clubhouse was already engulfed in flames. But CAL FIRE kept the blaze from spreading to other buildings and surrounding vegetation. The cause of the blaze remains under investigation. The historic country club was established in 1957 as part of a golf course and country club estate homes. The resort has hosted many major golf tournaments, attracting famous golfers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Despite the roaring economy, food insecurity got worse in 2022, nationally and in Los Angeles County. New data from the USDA shows 12.8% of American households were food insecure last year, an increase of more than 2.5% from 2021. And a recent report from USC found that more than 1 million households in LA County are food insecure. Alba Velasquez with the Los Angeles Food Policy Council says inflation is partly to blame, as the cost of living in California has gone up 19% since 2020.
So there's been an increase in housing and your utility bills and food without seeing an increase in livable wages.
And inflation rose even as millions lost their jobs during COVID. So food pantries have seen an increase in demand. The most recent state budget put $35 million into the Market Match program to help low-income families afford fresh produce at farmers markets. In addition, families on EBT, also known as food stamps, saw a steep drop in their monthly benefits once the pandemic emergency ended. Velasquez says that means rates of food insecurity will be even worse for 2023.
During COVID, there was an increased allotment for EBT recipients that was between $36 and $95 per month. It was an emergency temporary allotment that ended this last March. And so now we're in a deeper crisis.
The issue will come up again in the next few months as legislators hammer out a new farm bill, which provides funding for food assistance. Some conservative lawmakers have called for significant cuts in SNAP food benefits. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. The FDA is warning consumers not to purchase and to immediately stop using 26 over-the-counter eye drop products sold at major retailers and online due to the potential risk of eye infections that could result in partial vision loss or blindness. Patients who have signs or symptoms of an eye infection after using these products should talk to their health care provider or seek medical care immediately. These products are under the following brands: CVS Health, Cardinal Health, Leader, Rugby, Rite Aid, Target Up and Up, and Velocity Pharma. Ophthalmic drug products pose a potential heightened risk of harm to users because drugs applied to the eyes bypass some of the body's natural defenses. These products are intended to be sterile. FDA recommended the manufacturer of these products recall all lots on October 25th after agency investigators found unsanitary conditions in the manufacturing facility and positive bacterial test results from samples in drug production areas. FDA urges consumers to throw away these products, or you can return them to the retailer for a refund. CVS, Rite Aid, Walmart, and Target are removing the products from their store shelves and websites. But products branded as Leader, Rugby, and Velocity may still be available in stores and online and should not be purchased.
Backers of a proposed ballot initiative to require government ID to vote have just gotten state approval to start gathering signatures. A group called Reform California, run by conservative radio host Carl DeMaio, is sponsoring the initiative but did not respond to requests for comment. Their website cites concerns about voter fraud. Jonathan Metta-Stein with California Common Cause says cases of voter impersonation are infinitesimal, and voter ID requirements hurt the approximately 10% of Californians who don't have a driver's license or state ID card.
You would be solving a problem that doesn't really exist, so you're not gaining much, but you are putting barriers in front of young voters, older voters, voters with disabilities, and low-income voters. The trade-offs are not worth it.
The proposal would also add requirements around maintenance of voter rolls, verification of ballot signatures, and audits of the election process. California already has extensive security measures in place to match voters' addresses and signatures with those on file, and non-citizens cannot vote. Stein says a bill on voter ID is introduced in almost every legislative session.
It never goes anywhere because it's bad policy, and I think the proponents are sick of losing in the legislature and have decided to take this to the ballot.
Voters have put Democrats in control of California's executive and legislative branches. The Reform California website states that so-called election integrity measures are necessary to achieve backers' long-term goal to retake power at the state level. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The San Diego County Medical Examiner's investigators are asking for the public's help to identify a woman who was fatally hit by a car while crossing Cuyamaca Street north of Weld Boulevard in El Cajon late on the evening of September 22nd. The driver stopped and called 911. El Cajon police officers and Santee firefighters arrived to help, but she died at the scene. The unidentified black woman is approximately 40 to 50 years old, 5'3", 110 pounds, with brown eyes, gray and black short curly hair. She did not have any identification with her at the time of the incident, and investigators are unable to identify her with fingerprints. A forensic sketch artist has created an image of the woman and some of the clothes she was wearing when the accident occurred, including a dark short-sleeved shirt and flip-flops. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Investigations Unit at the San Diego County Medical Examiner's Office at 858-694-2905. And you can view that forensic sketch at eastcountymagazine.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. East County has a wealth of treasured holiday events coming up this season, from holiday lighting displays and craft fairs to local festivals, a train ride aboard the North Pole Express, and a performance of the Nutcracker Ballet. Julian Farm and Orchard will be transformed into a winter wonderland with the first ever ice rink there from November 10th through January 1st from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This skating arena in Julian is a synthetic and water-free ice substitute that aligns with Julian Farm and Orchard's commitment to sustainability. You can rent their ice skates or bring your own. You can also enjoy snuggling by outdoor fires, roasting marshmallows, holiday tastes, and taps. You can reserve your spot online at julianfarmandorchard.com. Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center will be transformed into a seasonal marketplace featuring one-of-a-kind gifts from artists and craftspeople with nature-themed offerings on Sunday, November 12th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The MTRP Foundation will provide shuttle service from Patrick Henry High School starting at 8:30 a.m. A percentage of all sales will benefit the park through the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation. In addition to products including ceramics, jewelry, soaps, cards, home goods, woodworking, and fine art, attendees can peruse the Visitor Center gift shop, which will be stocked with new Mission Trails merchandise. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum invites you to take a ride aboard the North Pole Limited Railway each Friday and Saturday from November 24th through December 16th, departing at 5 p.m. and again at 7 p.m. The fun begins at the festive Campo Depot, where guests can pick up tickets and browse the holiday items in the gift shop. Once aboard the North Pole Limited, a crew of elves will regale you with holiday songs and stories, serve hot chocolate and fresh cookies, and more. The North Pole Limited winds its way through the beautiful backcountry on its way to the North Pole, where it stops at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus. The train ride lasts about 90 minutes as Santa and Mrs. Claus visit with passengers on the train on the way back to the Campo Depot. For tickets, you can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org. The City of Santee will host its holiday lighting celebration Friday, November 17th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Santee Trolley Square. Visitors can enjoy sledding, live music by the Bayou Brothers, holiday photos with Santa, face painting, and a tree lighting at 6:15 p.m. Find details at cityofsanteeca.gov. Pine Valley Camp Christmas transforms into a winter wonderland where you can view thousands of computerized lights strung on trees and a spectacular water show, both synchronized to holiday music. This year's event runs November 17th through 26th and December 1st through 23rd from 5:30 to 9 p.m. You can also enjoy hay rides, bounce houses, laser tag, tree climbing, and many other games and attractions for all ages, plus tasty foods. For full details, visit pinevalleycampchristmas.com. You're invited to the annual Holiday Lights on Main Street celebration in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, November 25th from 2 to 8 p.m. The festivities include ice skating on the promenade, family fun and live music with the tree lighting at 6 p.m. at the corner of Main and Magnolia. Entertainment on stage will feature the Audio Hounds Band from 2 to 4:15 p.m. and the Harmony Grove Band from 5 to 8 p.m. It's also Small Business Saturday, when each year thousands of visitors come out to support their local businesses in downtown El Cajon. Find details at downtownelcajon.com. The largest outdoor ice rink in Southern California will be open at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine from November 23rd through January 7th, from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. Skate rentals are available. You can also enjoy holiday shopping at the Outlet Center's many shops. For details, visit viejasoutletcenter.com. For a roaring good time, you're invited to a turkey bash at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, where you can watch rescued big cats and bears savor their Thanksgiving feast. This special event will take place November 24th and 25th, the Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving at 10 a.m. Tickets to this wild event are required, and early booking is advised since it sells out quickly. Guests are encouraged to bring an item from the nonprofit sanctuary's wish list, which will be sent to you after you book a reservation. For tickets, visit lionstigersandbears.org. Julian will host its annual Julian Country Christmas and Tree Lighting on November 25th from 12 noon to 7:30 p.m. at the future home of the new Julian Town Square in the heart of this historic Gold Rush town. There will be a Christmas market with holiday vendors and crafts, plus entertainment throughout the day. Music will start at 2 p.m. and continue until the tree lighting at 5:30, after which Santa will arrive to meet and greet the children. This event is hosted by the Julian Merchants Association and Julian Chamber of Commerce. Find details at visitjulian.com. Grossmont Center, the regional shopping mall in La Mesa, encourages you to shop local at its Holiday Fest Craft Market on Small Business Saturday, November 25th. Holiday Fest is co-hosted by the Well Community for Women. Discover heartwarming holiday gifts and unique treasures made by local artisans and vendors. You can support the youngest entrepreneurs at the Children's Market inside the Well and visit Santa's Workshop. The Holiday Fest Craft Market is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and later, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., the mall will have holiday performances and tree lighting, partnering with the Salvation Army for their Red Kettle Kickoff and shows by musicians, dancers, gymnasts, and more. including Celtic Nations Pipe Band, San Diego Gymnastics, the Magi, Dance Days, the Salvation Army Brass Band, the Well Community for Women Children Performance, and the Tree Lighting Ceremony. Plus, you can get photos with Santa, donate a new unwrapped gift to the Toy Drive, and enjoy complimentary refreshments. Learn more at GrossmontCenter.com. Santee Lakes will host its Lights at the Lakes Holiday Light Show on December 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. This event features 1 mile with over 100,000 lights and more than 35 larger-than-life displays all synced to the car radio. Tickets will be available at SanteeLakes.com. The Ramona Chamber of Commerce will host Ramona's annual Christmas tree lighting on December 2nd at the Guy B. Woodward Museum on Main Street. The event runs from 5 to 9 p.m. with a tree lighting at 7. Enjoy the holiday decorations, late shopping and dining, classic cars, live music, vendors, kids' crafts, dancing, carolers, photos with Santa, and more. For details, see RamonaChamber.com. La Mesa's historic downtown will transform into a Victorian-style village for the city's annual Holiday in the Village event on Saturday, December 2nd from noon to 9 p.m. The event is held in the heart of La Mesa's downtown along La Mesa Boulevard between Spring and 4th Streets. Visitors can stroll the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown while exploring dozens of local craft vendors, then cozy up with artisan and craft foods. Friends and family can relax by the fire pits in the streets while enjoying holiday caroling, cheerful holiday music, and fun live entertainment from local schools and clubs. You can also take selfies with Santa, and kids can enjoy a children's area bigger than Santa's toy shop. A full schedule of events will be posted at lamesavillageassociation.org. The City of Lemon Grove will host its 24th annual holiday bonfire on December 3rd from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Traganza Park on Main Street in Lemon Grove. The event includes live music, food booths, arts and crafts, a rock climbing wall, game truck, cookies and hot chocolate, and a giant bonfire to light up the night. Learn more at lemongrovesd.net. On December 16th at 1 p.m., the San Diego Ballet brings the Nutcracker Ballet to the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon. The Nutcracker features Tchaikovsky's timeless musical score and an international cast of more than 100 beautifully costumed dancers. Sugarplum fairies, leaping Cossacks, and flurries of snowflakes swirl across the stage in this magical journey through a young girl's imagination. For tickets, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. Noah Holmes in Spring Valley will present its 6th annual Enchanted Village on December 15th to 22nd from 5 to 8 p.m. Drive through 8 acres of holiday lighting with magical cottages, light tunnels, and over 1 million lights. Also enjoy live musical performances, carolers, hundreds of candy canes and Christmas trees, holiday displays, and more. All proceeds benefit Noah Holmes, a nonprofit that provides housing and care to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities such as Down syndrome and autism. For tickets and details, visit enchantedvillage.org. You can find details on all of these events and more at our calendar on eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week, and we'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're invited. KNSJ 89.1 FM is celebrating 10 years of community-powered radio. Join us at our gala, Saturday, November 11th, at the UDW AFSME Hall, 4855 Seminole Drive in San Diego. Doors open at 5 p.m. for dinner and entertainment with Reg E. Gaines, Katie LaDubs, Young Lions, and Gilbert Castellanos. For tickets, go to knsj.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
What Hamas did was horrific, and there's no justification for it. And what is also true is that the occupation and what's happening to Palestinians is unbearable.
Nobody's hands are clean in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, says former President Barack Obama on Pod Save America, emphasizing shared responsibility and complex history. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders says he doubts whether a ceasefire is even possible with Hamas,
which is dedicated to turmoil and chaos and destroying the state of Israel. And I think what the Arab countries in the region understand, that Hamas has got to go.
Anti-Defamation League Director Jonathan Greenblatt says there's been nearly a 400% increase in U.S. anti-Semitic incidents since Hamas attacked Israel, with anti-Semitism more often seen as normal on the far right and the hard left.
This is a moment of accountability, not just for universities, which, by the way, are failing the test. This is a moment of accountability for America.
Anti-Muslim violence is also increasing. Scandal-ridden New York Republican George Santos says 2023 has been anything but easy, with mounting criminal charges and calls to resign. Still, he says he'd run again, even if expelled from Congress.
Nobody elected me because I played volleyball or not. Nobody elected me because I graduated college or not. People elected me because I said I'd come here to fight the swamp, I'd come here to lower inflation, create more jobs, make life more affordable, and a commitment to America.
Openly gay and married U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg tells CNN it's unsettling that right-wing House Speaker Mike Johnson doesn't support the families of non-heterosexual couples.
I will admit it's a little bit difficult driving the family minivan to drop our kids off at daycare, passing the dome of a Capitol, knowing that the Speaker of the House sitting under that dome doesn't even think our family ought to exist.
Johnson has said he genuinely loves all people, regardless of their lifestyle choices. This week, Maine voters might decide to transfer ownership of its two largest private utilities to the public, a first for any state. Al Cleveland, with the Pine Tree Campaign, says utilities owned by multinational corporations don't serve consumers or shift to clean energy fast enough.
Having a public power company to serve Maine will give us the ability to have greater participation in our democracy and in our communities.
Democratic Governor Janet Mills calls the plan a hostile takeover that could be stuck in the courts for years. Finally, a new Siena College New York Times poll of registered voters shows former President Donald Trump ahead of President Joe Biden by 3 to 10 points in 5 of 6 battleground states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.